Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm your host, Stan Jastrzebski. In studio with me this week is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Good to see you, sir.
Thank you, Stan. Good to be with you.
If you've got a question for our program this next half hour, feel free to call us at 496-1999. You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Let me start with a local issue that actually came up from looking at our community events calendar at our website, WBAA.org. We have an event that's coming up later this month that is set to take place on the John Myers Bridge, and this has been under construction for some time now, and I believe the event is the last weekend of this month. Is the bridge going to be ready by then?
Well, we certainly hope so. That's been a long project and a challenging project. As you know, we had to work on the piers down in the water. We've had to work on the decking. And, of course, the weather in June really hurt us for some of the work that we had to do. And then some of the things your listeners may not be aware of yet, when we looked at the bridge and got some of the decking and stuff off, some of the steel and metals were in worse condition than were anticipated. And, of course, you can't know that until you start tearing it apart. And so we had to do some additional work. In fact, if we had not done that additional work, the load ratings for the bridges would have been decreased, and we would not have been able to put as many people on the bridge for events and things that we wanted to do. So we took the time and the expense and went ahead and fixed all that, actually got out the originals, found the original shop drawings of when the bridge was built to do some work. And so between weather and that, we are behind a little bit. We're really hoping that we'll be completed in time for that event to take place on the bridge as scheduled. But, you know, we're committed to making sure that when we're done, the bridge is sound, the bridge is, as we've always said, in good shape for decades and generations to come. And that's going to be our primary concern. But I sure got my fingers crossed for good weather for the rest of the month and that we can pull that off, getting that done for that event.
When there's a municipal construction project that's like that and is going on, how are you able to get updates on a project like that so you can keep abreast of what the latest developments are on something like that?
Well, I mean, I meet with the city engineer and her staff on a regular basis, and our offices are only about 60 seconds apart, fortunately. So we communicate regularly, literally daily. I talk with the city engineer about the variety of projects going on throughout the city, and then we have formal meetings scheduled also. And so, in fact, she just updated me twice yesterday and today on some of the railing panels that we're working on down there, and one of the colors for a piece that we're doing on some of the coatings. It looks like they might have shipped the wrong color powder, so we're going to have to ship some of that back. So I literally get briefed daily on most of all of our larger projects.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. If you've got a question for Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski over the next half an hour, give us a phone call. 496-1999 is the telephone number. We're in the 765 area code. You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. I wondered what you're hearing from business owners, particularly those near the exits that are affected on I-65, about the now more or less week-long closure that they've had to endure. Are you hearing that business owners are having a particularly tough time?
Well, I have not had a business owner contact me directly and call me and say, hey, Mayor, this is my personal situation, so I want to be upfront about that. But you know, logically, it would tell you that without that flow of traffic through that area, that certainly that without that volume of cars, that there would be a decrease in some of the restaurants and some of the gas stations out there. So I'm sure that is occurring. And nobody has called and spoke specifically with me about that yet. But fortunately, you know, we do have a good local area, and we draw from a lot of the surrounding areas that people can get in from some of the other towns and things. And so I think probably certain times a day are better than others. But I think, you know, there's still, when I go out there, because I don't live too far from there, you know, the restaurants still have good crowds in them. There's still people utilizing the restaurants. Obviously, it's going to be more local than some of that. So, you know, that's part of the situation that they're dealing with. Obviously, that bridge closure is a significant issue for the community in a couple different ways. One is that business traffic. Two, boy, the gridlock the first day that happened. The city was literally gridlocked for hours and hours, and we certainly can't have that happen again. And then for our commuters going back and forth to Indianapolis, obviously it's an issue. Now, on a positive note on that, I had received an email from a commuter early on, and that was very concerned and frustrated with the trip and how long it was taking, and made that known. Monday or Tuesday of this week, I got a follow-up email from the same individual that said, "Hey, Mayor, I just wanted to let you know that with the new lights that are up at 28 and the lights that are up at 231, my commute back from Indianapolis was much better. I'm not spending near as much time on the road as I was, so that I just wanted to let me know that it did help and it cut down some of that commute time. Obviously, it's not perfect yet. So, you know, I think that we'll continue to monitor the closure, and NDOT has been very good about communicating with the city. Alan Plunkett, who is the commissioner for the Crawfordsville region that Lafayette falls under, was calling me 2 and 3 times a day some days. So they've been very good partners in communicating. But still, I personally still do not know yet what the final findings have been from the engineering firms, but my sense of it is that we still have a long way to go.
Let me ask you about that, because you and I were both at the Monday press conference that NDOT held. Did you think they had enough answers for you, the local leaders, and for everybody else who's a driver and is affected by the closure?
I can understand people's frustration, and it may feel like they would like to have more information. I certainly understand that. I also understand from doing large projects here in our community. We mined a tunnel underneath downtown. Many of your listeners probably remember that. It was almost 3,000 feet long and 30 feet underground, 10 inches wide. When you're dealing with soils and geotechnical issues and underground issues and water and the artesian effect that they talk about, I understand that you don't always find the answer as quickly as you would like, and that you do have to be careful and make sure that you're not making a mistake when you come up with the recommendation for what you think the fix should be. And so I do think that they're trying to do their due diligence. I do honestly believe they are fully committed, as is the governor, to getting it fixed as quickly as possible and to fixing it right. But the soils are tricky and water is tricky, and sometimes the answer can be hard to find. And I think they're just wanting to make sure before they tell us all that they got it right.
Let me get back to this in just a second. I want to go, though, to a call we had just a minute ago, getting back to our previous topic. Michael calls in and wants to know if the pedestrian bridge, when finished, is going to be more bike accessible. And, of course, there's a ramp on the West Lafayette side right now, and there's an elevator on the Lafayette side that you can obviously fit a bicycle into. I think probably he wants to know more about maybe a ramp or something like that that's easier on the Lafayette side of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, a couple things. Thank you to your caller there. When the bridge is finished, there'll be a couple things in phases that will happen. On the, if you're coming from West Lafayette and you get across the bridge and you get to the first set of steps to go up to the bridge, it actually crosses the railroad tracks, there will be a ramp system there for handicap folks and for people with bicycles and strollers. There will be a ramp system that will take you up to the top of the bridge. It will, because of the topography there and how steep everything is, it will be a ramp that you will probably have to walk your bike. I'm not sure that a rider would be able to stay on their bike, but you won't have to carry it. So you'd be able to walk your bike. When you get to the top of Reilly Plaza then, as part of the bridge over the railroad tracks, as part of the new development at 101 Main Street with the new regional headquarters for Old National Bank and the 94 luxury apartments that will be built there. The City of Lafayette, along with the Wabash River Enhancement Corporation and that developer, was going to be building a riverfront promenade. So there'll be a riverfront promenade that will tie on the top there where the bridge touches. A secondary project, but will be built at the same time. We're going to build a ramp off of that that will wind back through there. In fact, it's 1 to 20, which is the best ADA rating that you could have. And it also is being constructed in a way that a bicyclist, I should say maybe a good bicyclist, won't have to get off their bike. Everybody would be able to walk it. A good bicyclist probably can ride it without having to get off, and that will come down into really Plaza.
So when you say 1 to 20, is that like a foot of rise over 20 feet of run, something like that?
Yeah, that's the grade. That's the grade. That's how it slopes. And we tried not to put hard turns in it. So bicyclists that could make those turns without getting off their bike. So yes, to answer the question, when the project is fully done, the bridge project in 101 Main Street, there'll be ramping systems will be very conducive for handicap use, strollers, pedestrians, bicyclists. So you'll really have a couple options for people. You'll have ramps, you'll have steps, and you'll have elevators. So we're very happy about that.
All right. If you have a question for Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski today, you can call us at 496-1999. Send your emails to ask@wbaa.org or tweet questions at WBAA News on Twitter. We've got another question in from Brian, who says that he's from Southern California originally, and he says in the 70s there was green space and there was agriculture in Southern California. He says that's all gone now. I see Greater Lafayette moving quickly in that direction, being swallowed up by industry warehouses and chain stores. He wants to know, what's the plan to prevent Greater Lafayette from turning into what Sagamore Parkway and South Street are in his mind, which he calls Little Southern Californias, with lots of urban sprawl, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for the question. That'd be a new one. I don't think we've ever been compared to Southern California before, so it's interesting. But there, back in the late 90s, there was NUZO came into effect, a unified zoning ordinance for Tippecanoe County. And so since that time, the late 1990s, there has been significant changes in zoning and usage that really do help control urban sprawl, suburban sprawl, I should say, and how the roads are developed, how neighborhoods are developed, where commercial warehousing industry are developed. And I think it's actually, I wouldn't say it worked perfect, but over time I think it's actually worked very well to ensure that there is that conscientious effort for green space, parks and recreation, trails, bicycle facilities with our roads, and that we're doing those things that make sure that we grow in an orderly manner. Now, as far as industrial growth and taking up some of the land, yes, we do. And, you know, that's what we want to do that. I want to be honest with that. We are a heavily advanced manufacturing community. We are blessed to have companies such as Subaru, Alcoa, Nonshan, Wabash National, Caterpillar, Evonik, Kirby Risk. The list goes on and on, which provides very, very good paying jobs for the community. Our latest development with GE. And so we do set aside land, but we do set it aside in areas for industrial growth. And we will continue to do that because that's really the lifeblood of the community. But we think we're doing that in a way that makes sense for people and for job growth, to make us economically attractive and also make us attractive for families and young professionals with our development of Matchbox and the work that we're doing along the riverfront through the Wabash River Enhancement Corporation.
Brian, thanks for your question. We've got about 15 minutes left with Lafayette's Tony Rozworski. Email ask@wbaa.org, tweet questions at WBAA News, or call us at 496-1999. Let me get back to I-65 for a second. Is the closure of the road and how it's affected your community and how it's caused you to take another look at the infrastructure around here going to change the way you lobby the legislature over the next couple of sessions? Does it cause you to think in a slightly different way about the infrastructure around you, especially the infrastructure the state owns and maintains?
Really, we've been pretty aggressive, Stan, lobbying the legislature and talking about infrastructure and roads and bridges, and we will continue to do that. I mean, I don't think anybody, I hope, would disagree that the country as a whole, Congress, and at the state and local levels, everybody has to work together and find out a solution to the infrastructure, look at the gas tax, look at indexing it towards inflation, looking at those different solutions and quit making roads, bridges, and all that infrastructure a political issue. I mean, that's one issue that I think really doesn't need to be a political issue. We ought to be able to agree. That's what keeps America running. We're always going to need that infrastructure and rail infrastructure, all of those things. It puts a lot of people to work when we do those projects. And, it really is time for the country because, the money flows, in a lot of different ways, up and down and back and forth to local communities through many different types of programs, and it's time for everybody to get together and get this worked out because, if we want America to stay prosperous, you probably saw the city's won a couple awards here recently, one from Forbes magazine for the best, number two best small metro in the United States for business and careers. Then we won an award for the amount of exports that we have, and then recently an award from a group called Boyd, which I'm personally not familiar with yet, and I want to look into for our advanced manufacturing. All of those things require infrastructure to do. And if as a state and of local communities, we want to be able to stay prosperous, to be able to attract business. And as you saw from that report, a lot of businesses are beginning to move back from China. They're moving back to the United States. And if we want to continue to remain attractive to win some of those businesses back, infrastructure has got to be in place. And so that's really an issue that I hope everybody can come together on and find a solution.
I wanted to address with you something that I've gotten a number of press releases on from the police department recently, which is violent crime, specifically a number of shootings in the last couple of months. And I'll make a couple of caveats to that right at the outset, which is that most of them have said that the police investigation turns up the fact that the people knew each other in one way, that they believe it was an isolated incident between two people who were acquainted and had some sort of a disagreement. It was not random violent crime. And I've also been talking to people who nonetheless worry about what they see as an increase in violent crime and what they otherwise see as a very safe community over the long haul. Is there any reason for them to worry about an increase in violent crime?
Well, I think you actually phrased it very well, Stan. I mean, the reality is Lafayette is still a very, very safe community. Lafayette, West Lafayette, the whole area is still a very, very safe community. Have there been incidents of crime, or are there certain pockets of crime in the community where crime has increased? Absolutely. Nobody denies that. I don't think it's as widespread as maybe is portrayed sometimes or when you look at certain maps that's been out there. I think it's more it's more focused than that. But the reality is, and the police department is doing a lot of things, and there'll be some announcement in the future, some additional things that we'll be doing. But we really have to look at it from the community and national perspective. If you look at all of our crime, about 91% of the crime is still property crime. It's not a crime against a person per se, like the violent stuff that you're talking about. The rest of it's about 8% is in that category that you would consider more violent type crime. 99% of that 8% is related to drugs and drug usage. People that are addicted to heroin, meth, people that are selling drugs, using drugs, ripping off each other. And that is driving a vast majority of the crime. If you look at the incidents that are under investigation right now of the last shooting, that young man, one of the young people involved in that, is from Delphi. If you look at the CVS that got robbed three times out on 231, those people drove up from Attica. that did that. They lived in Attica. They didn't live here. The drug epidemic throughout the country and in Indiana, in large cities and small cities, is driving a significant portion of the crime. So we're going to have to look at, as a country and as a state, how do we address that? I mean, we've got to go way down the food chain, you know, starting with pre-K education, all-day kindergarten, job training, addiction facilities for people that are addicted. We're going to have to work to keep families together, to create new opportunities for our young people not to get involved in drugs. It's going to have to be a community, state, and national response. Meth is very easy to make. I mean, there was a meth bust that was covered just last week out in a neighborhood that has actually very little crime in it. But it's so easy to make meth and to still get the ingredients for meth. I mean, those are some hard discussions that we're going to need to have. We're going to have to mobilize as communities to really attack. You know, Richard Nixon declared war on drugs back in the 70s, and we're still fighting it. And every time we make a little progress, somebody devises something new, like meth or ice. They come up with different alternatives. And so
is the city keeping up well enough, though? Because even if, I mean, sure, there are people who come in from the outside, but there are plenty of Lafayette residents and plenty of West Lafayette residents, not to make it a single community problem, that are, I think you're correctly saying, drug addicted and have caused problems with law enforcement. So what are your drug interdiction officers doing to try to root out that problem?
Well, I mean, we have a street crimes unit. We have a drug task force. I can tell you that the street crimes unit from January to the end of June has made about 350 arrests on cases that they're working on. You see in the paper and other media outlets just a few weeks ago where four people were arrested for dealing heroin. They actually make a lot of arrests, but you cannot arrest your way out of this problem. That's only one part of the answer. There will never be, you could not possibly afford, there will never be enough police officers for every person that lives here, because you're absolutely right, or every person that drives in here from someplace else and can just stop and rent a motel room, right off of 65 and set up a small meth lab in a hotel room. And it happens. We make arrests for those. So it's going to take a coordinated effort and a community effort to really work on that. And we're going to announce some of those things here in the next month or so that we've been looking at that we think may help. You know,
Can you give us any sense of what those might be?
Well, we're going to look at everything from increased code enforcement to some restructuring at the police department that we're talking about. We rolled out just a small thing yesterday. Some of the media outlets covered it, where we're asking citizens, if they have surveillance cameras at business and stuff, to register them with the police department. Doesn't give us the right to use them in any way without their permission, but we're trying to get a comprehensive list of where all those cameras are to go along with the cameras we have. So if we have crimes in certain areas, or we know that somebody may have walked by an area, we will see if there's a camera there. We haven't talked about it a lot, but we actually even created a couple spaces out by fire station number 5 off of Creasy Lane and Union Street there for Craigslist exchange. Because, you know, that can become a problem. So there's two parking spaces there with signs where people can use them for if they bought something off Craigslist and they're meeting somebody. And we have cameras there, so it's being constantly monitored and videotaped. So there's going to be a lot of little things like that, and then some larger things. And, you know, I met with a neighborhood group last night, talked to them about some things that we can do individually in our neighborhoods. And that's all going to work, but we're still going to have to get farther down the chain to get to the point where people don't, as long as there is a market and there are people that are willing to abuse drugs, there's going to be a market for those that want to sell those drugs and make money, and that leads to crime. And so we're still going to have to get to those causes that lead people to begin that initial drug use that unfortunately, leads to leads to crime or doing desperate acts to get money to buy drugs.
So we've got a question that came in from Luke who wants to know, will the police investigate hard drugs like heroin and turn off the focus of drugs like marijuana, he says?
I can tell you with a great deal of certainty that a lot of our focus is on heroin and meth. I mean, that we are doing a lot of focus. If you see most of our arrests, I'm not telling you we don't do any marijuana arrest or interdiction into marijuana, because some people times that deal marijuana deal other drugs. Some people that use marijuana use other drugs. I know there's a lot of discussion out there, is marijuana a gateway drug or not? I mean, and that's a long, long discussion for another day. But I can tell you that we know that heroin and meth, those are the drugs that are driving the other crimes, a large percentage of the other crimes. And
let me ask you a quick policy question. From your point of view as both a mayor and a longtime former police officer, if the state, as other states have done, legalized marijuana use, better or worse for your city's crime rate?
I believe states should have a role in making that decision, but I am not, I'm just not an advocate of legalizing marijuana at this point. I've seen it as a policeman. I do believe, and I know this will probably spark some calls for you. There are some people that can use it recreationally and it never leads to anything else or any real problems. But for a lot of people that have other issues that may be involved in their lives, and then you throw in just even some issue or alcohol, which I know is legal, it can snowball into other problems that continue to grow. And so, I'm not sure that that's the right answer. I think the solutions are farther down the food chain and changing some things in society. And then helping people that do have mental illness and have, we don't have really a lot of addiction treatment. If you have really good insurance, there is. But, we still lack the access to proper addiction treatment for a lot of people.
And in just our last 60 seconds or so here, with your background in law enforcement, when people say we're worried about crime, whether you feel it's a founded concern or not, how does that strike you as somebody who has had a career in trying to fight crime? Does it worry you more as mayor because that was your past career and you have expertise in that area and you think you should be able to understand why some of these things happen and how to fight them?
Well, I mean, certainly we take it very seriously, and I take it very seriously. I don't want people to have to live in fear. We don't want that, and they shouldn't. But I know perception can be reality sometimes too. And so, we're going to continue to work hard to educate people to actually what's going on. We've created a new department already where we have a specialist now that works with crime prevention. And we're going to continue to do those things. And I feel good about what's coming out. The strength of the community is very good. Thank you.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always, and we'll do it again next month.
Thanks, Dan.
And remember, you can always find archived versions of Ask the Mayor at our website, wbaa.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Tune in next week for our conversation with Frankfurt's Chris McBarnes. Until then, have a good rest of your day.
Support for Ask the Mayor on WBAA comes from your membership and Butler, Fairman & Seifert, a civil engineering firm providing communities with professional expertise and guidance. Butler, Fairman & Seifert, civil engineering solutions for better communities. BFSENGR.com.